those kind words, I was waiting to see what you were going to do with my political stint. Many people don't know what to do with this. The bishop said that Professor Corkman had said everything she had wanted to say, and then she went on to do exactly that to me. Said everything that I had to say. I do want to say what a very special privilege this is. I want to thank the faculty for this kind invitation. In the letter that I received inviting me to give this address, I was warned that this should not be an academic talk. But they didn't say what it must be. They told me what it must not be. I do want to say that my sense of this conference is that this is a moment for deep thinking. I could have chosen to give an inspirational talk, but I didn't think that that would be correct for this meeting. I don't think we need any more inspiration. But I did think that it should be a moment when we do a bit of serious thinking about the church, about the call for the gospel to be a source of hope for Africa. I think it is right that we should be thinking about the pains of Africa. I think it is right that we should be asking ourselves how Christ is and can be the hope for the healing and reawakening of Africa. As the bishop indicated earlier, many things are happening in our continent that consistently seek to undermine the integrity of our continent. Things that point to the chronic illness of Africa, even making us to worry about the future. Allow me please to highlight a few of these. The African continent has fought mighty battles, championing the cause of freedom, refusing to accept a position of subservience to those who have wielded political power over it. Africa has resisted the subjugation of its people to the permanent status of being hewers of wood and drawers of water. One thing I believe we need to underline is that the battles of Africa have been fought on the high moral plane. I don't know how many of you still remember anything about the gathering in Manchester in the United Kingdom in 1945, where a few leaders of Africa committed Africa to political freedom before the end of the 20th century. When they did that, they knew that they had the kind favor of the moral arc of the universe, whose certainty never fails. Christian faith goes even beyond this assurance, as we heard earlier, by asserting that justice is in the very nature of God. Its inevitability is guaranteed in the resurrection of the Lord Jesus. Yet the reality of Africa continues to belie the certainty of this truth. Africans continue to suffer, even at the hands of their own kith and kin. Their own, often democratically elected governments, who should be taking them on a way to better life. There is no continent that has more refugees than our beloved continent. Africa ranks with the poorest continents in the world. Unmerited death is our daily companion in Africa. Death through poverty-induced diseases. The new phenomenon that is now on the rise is that of terrorist attacks in Africa. Indeed, we bemoan what is happening in West Africa. The kidnapping of the schoolgirls in Nigeria smacks of yesteryear's kidnapping of young people to turn them into child soldiers. Events in East Africa are disconcerting. The birth of the newest state in Africa is severely destabilized in South Sudan. Kenya has to be on constant alert. The dawn of political freedom in South Africa, at the wave of an amazing moral high ground in 1994, was hailed by the continent as the dawn of the new journey. Banish hunger, poverty, corruption, inequality, and injustice. The resolution of our forebears in 1945 was fulfilled before the turn of the end of the century. The continent was politically free from Cape to Cairo. Now was the season for a new struggle, the struggle to feed ourselves, the struggle for a totally free nation where all cherish the same goal, an Africa on a journey to wholesome life for its entire people. Hand in hand with what I have described, the fact that Africa is being hailed as the continent with the fastest growing Christian population. One would assume from this that the hope that is at the center of the Christian faith must be a source of great and vibrant optimism for the people of Africa. The question, simply put, is this. the excitement associated with the growth of the Christian church in Africa translates into equal optimism for the continent? Has Christianity anything at all to offer for the healing and restoration of this continent? I start with the fact that Christians have sometimes acknowledged that Christianity has not been entirely innocent of the evils that have been perpetrated on our continent. It is a fact beyond dispute now that instead of Christianizing the Africans, the church served as the handmaiden for the cultural expansionism of the West. Now, before some of you suggest to yourselves that you have heard all that before, let me be quick to say that I'm operating from the premise that has been argued by many, including the former General Secretary of the World Council of Churches, the Reverend Dr. Sam Kobia, that Africa is becoming the epicenter of Christianity. But the question that I would like to raise, which I would want to hope that this conference will get to grips with, is what type of Christianity? Is it a Christianity that heals the continent? Or is it a Christianity that continues to be the handmaiden of the ever-expanding imperialism, even under the guise of globalization? As a Christian evangelical, I could simply say that we must call more people to Christ, and that as they become Christian, all wrongs will be put right. But history would not support me if I made that call. In fact, history will go so far as to indict us Christians for having been responsible for so much that has gone wrong in the continent. But I also agree with Archbishop Desmond Tutu in his constant assertion that Christianity has shown in the contradictions of Africa that it has the capacity to self-correct. And so, if anything about this conference, my plea is that we will honestly reflect on serious mistakes we may have made and seriously take the opportunity to self-correct. I ascribe to the view that the problem has not been so much in the person and work of Jesus Christ as to how we have been lacking in following him faithfully. I wish to submit, though, that the problem is probably even deeper than the failure of individuals. Rather, the failure was guaranteed from the first day that the gospel was brought by the church to this continent. Because those who brought Christianity to us failed to understand that Christ can incarnate himself in sub-Saharan Africa without the mediation of their European culture and value systems. So in this presentation this morning, I wish to caution against the tendency for us to think that all is well with Christianity in Africa, that all we need to do is simply to make a few adjustments that will enable us to intensify the work of healing in Africa. I am calling for a far more radical self-examination that will enable Christianity to find a home in Africa, answering the deepest questions and longings in the souls of the African people. For what it is worth, can I just say it again? My hope in the gospel of Jesus is deep, but my fear that the church may not rise to the occasion as it should is real. The challenge begins with the need to become an authentic African church, both in our faith and in our practice. The church in South Africa has resisted the call to be an authentic African church, usually by observing that the need to overcome apartheid was paramount. But now that we have a democratic system, the church runs the risk of becoming a political commentator on the fringes of society, if not a willing accomplice to the evils that manifest themselves in our free society. This is not true only for South Africa, but for the whole continent. I suggest that our biggest challenge is to rethink what incarnation means or should mean for Africa. Failure to put Christianity in the essential fabric of African society has led to two distinct observations. First, the decline of the number of people willing to associate themselves with Christianity during the last census. And secondly, the vocal challenge to Christian leadership not to impose its moral standards on our society. Let me repeat what I'm saying. I am saying that there are two critical things that should sound a that should ring a bell of warning to us. First, the decline of those people during the last census who were willing to identify Christianity or any faith as their faith. The drop, if I remember well, from the previous census was something like 83% were willing to identify themselves as Christians. But in the last one, it was just below 70, or just about 70, of those who were willing to identify themselves. Now, if that does not ring bells for us, nothing will. The second thing is this. I don't know how many of you have been listening carefully. Whenever the church is trying to be prophetic in our South African context, words have come out quite firmly. Why should the church impose its values on this society? Who said that we are all Christians? Why should the church think that it still has priority in terms of what the values should be? Perhaps we have tried to Christianize our liturgies. We get excited between the Methodist church. People play drums a little bit, and you think Christianity is becoming relevant. But I wish to suggest that what we have tended to do is only cosmetic. We are trying to make the church just a little more acceptable to us. We have not sought to address the vexing questions of the African soul and the incarnation of Jesus in Africa effectively. Jesus' words have been repeated over and over again in churches. I have not come to destroy, but to fulfill. But can Africa echo that and say we are a witness that Jesus has not come to destroy, but to fulfill? I am inclined to believe that Africa is more likely to say, in my case, you have destroyed much and let me follow. Africa is asking, did you come to save me too? Otherwise, why are the powerful so exulting in the wealth of the continent that they even display it in our faces with disdain and impunity? The prime challenge that the church in Africa must address itself to is the disconnect between Christian faith and the reality of African living. We, the church, are partly responsible for this dualism. In the sub-Saharan African context, the rapture of life that came with the mission of the church is so real that it has influenced the almost total making of African societies. The twins of economic expansion on one hand and individualized faith on the other have bequeathed us a people whose spirituality has no capacity to transform society, and whose social life regards Christian faith as nothing more than an ameliorator of a troubled conscience with no significant social consequences. Most societies in Africa have suffered from oppression by Christians. Whether we are talking of political oppression or economic and cultural exploitation, this claim stands valid. What is worse is that even the church, in its dealings with its members, especially the poor, comes very close to merchandising grace and mercy. This is exploitation that happens in our churches that we have to revisit. The paradigm of doing church in Africa is intertwined with the life philosophies and patterns of the West, that it is doubtful to my mind if we can be truthfully the bearers of liberating good news to our people until we are ready and willing to revisit these and subject ourselves to radical surgery. In our thought patterns, in our spirituality, in our structures, and in our practice. At the heart of the call for the African Renaissance, which many Africans have in various forms and at various times called for, is the conviction that the essence of the renewal of Africa is in the renewal of its institutions, its people, and its collective self-esteem. For those Christians who see and understand this need, the starting point has to be the renewal and reconstruction of the church in Africa, which must model the envisaged, reconstructed African society. Eminent theologians, African theologians like John B.T. Olaji, Joe Gabriel Sitiluane, and many others, have made a case for the pre-missionary expressions of the divine in Africa. Eminent leaders like Nelson Mandela have shared how African traditional experiences had shaped their worldview and contributing to defining their values, thus affirming that there is something of value in Africa that has for many generations been ignored. Stephen Bantu Biko maintained up to his last breath that Africa has got something beautiful that the world is waiting for expectantly. He said, what the world is waiting for from Africa is spiritual. It is the gift of Ubuntu, a unique appreciation of what it means to be human in the context of greater creation, with the concept of caring being definitive of what life demands from humans. While this is not difficult for us as Christians to affirm, it will take a great deal of inner reflection to fully understand the extent of damage we may have unwittingly visited on Africa, and a greater effort still to correct it. When we speak of the call for the healing of Africa, we have to understand that it is a call for the deconstruction of Africa, as we have it now, and the reconstruction of the new Africa, a renaissance of Africa. I trust that none here will be sidetracked from understanding this call by the fact that it is often associated with former President Thabo Mbeki. One of the most informative works that I've come across recently on how the church intentionally and systematically dismantled African society is that of Graham Duncan in his groundbreaking work, Loving Coercive Agency. While some may accuse Duncan of seeming to repeat tired cliches of damage visited by missionaries on African society, in my view, his best contribution is in showing us in a carefully argued manner how the church systematically replaced the African society, its institutions, and its symbols with European ones, essentially recreating African people, person by person. I often wonder why it is that missionaries who come to Southern Africa or Sub-Saharan Africa with the gospel of Jesus and literally change communities, literally change the lifestyle, change the value systems, everything that goes with it. And when we become free, knowing what was wrong, are seemingly helpless to do anything about it, to reverse that which we know should never have been. The problem is that African people are disempowered in their personhood. They have lost the conviction that they have any contribution to make in the domain of universal peoplehood. can people generally, when they build their vision of Africa, still look to the global community, and everybody says Africa will be right when it starts to look like the global community. And Africans themselves have surrendered themselves to this thought. The result is that all we're trying to do is to catch up. We can never be able to say, here is our agenda in which we are the leaders. Let everybody else come and walk with us on this journey. Now, I want to suggest to this meeting that if Christ is going to be home to us in any significant manner, it is that crisis that must be addressed in our lives. The deeper crisis of a soul that is fallen. It is a deeper crisis than the crisis of lack of skills. It is a deeper crisis than being behind in modern technology and scientific knowledge. It is the crisis of finding that capacity to say, I'm actually okay. And I'm okay to design the future. I'm okay to work towards the rebuilding of that future. And if this conference will mean anything, it must show us how the church can help us to find that capacity to be confident in ourselves again. Unlike in classical evangelical Christian convergent processes, where the individual person stands at the center, in this case, or in African phenomenology, it is the collective with its institutions that stands at the center. Institution in this sense does not always mean organization, but rather it means the pivotal concept of interconnectedness from which life flows, around which life revolves, through which life is held together. The interconnectedness is captured through certain manifestations and symbols that are usually venerated by Africans. Let me cite one. The cattle prod. I'm not saying we must go back and recreate that, but I'm saying these things must inform our processes of recreating life or giving life. The cattle prod, to an African, is like a temple to a Jew. But it is located in the home of every family. When these temples, called cattle crawls, are linked together with the other temples in the community, they form the greater temple, Inkundla, the Khoya, the gathering of the community at the chief's place. But the crawl is more than a pen of the livestock. Because in many communities, the herds of families are buried in the crawl. When a child is born in African society, he or she is swathed in a skin of an animal slaughtered in the crawl, as a way of integrating this child to the full life of this family. When a bride is welcomed in a home, she's introduced to this home by planting a spear at the entrance of the crow. Family meetings, including extended family meetings, are held in or near the crow. The area in front of the crow is recognized as that home's ingunja, a place of gathering. When a son is deviating from the value systems of the home, he is summoned to the crow to be re-instructed on the ways to follow in the presence of the family's divinity. Important rituals of the family are largely performed at the crow. The seniors of the family preside over these. The wealth of the family, the values of the family, the faith of the family are all held together and represented by the crow. Graham Duncan correctly points out that Christianity comes to Africa with the concept of a chapel that is physically removed from the home. To people who met God here, they are told, no, you can't find God there. If you really want God, go there, in the chapel. Interlinking of life that was represented by the crow. If you want education, so says the church. You see now, you want to grow, you want to be educated. No, you cannot be educated by your grandpa. You cannot be educated by your grandma. If you want education, go out there. You will find education in that school over there. And the things that you are taught there don't relate to the things that grandpa and grandma talk about here. And suddenly, without thinking, the church completely destroys that which linked families to generations of values. And today we ask, what ever happened? How will this society ever have values again? We have been responsible, and we need to find a way to reverse it. Our greatest challenge is in presenting Christ as a unifier of families, allowing families to be the source of values that we complain every day about being trampled in the free Africa. I am not lionizing an ossified culture. Rather, I am suggesting that while a people is moving relentlessly forward to new futures, there are certain truths that have guided people that Christianity ought to recognize. That Christianity has got to find a language of conveying. And those truths can only be conveyed through the home. And I say, if it is not the church with the gospel of Jesus Christ at the center that will salvage the African people by accepting where it has gone wrong and way does church, the way it conveys the gospel, who else will help Africa? I am suggesting that the healing of the continent will be based on this quest to restore what the church unwittingly took away. The affirming faith that enhances responsible self-confidence, not merely to individuals, but to a people. Let me go back again to the imagery of the crow. The church has to accept the responsibility for the restoration of the link between faith, wealth creation, and responsible living. Unless we do this, we are going to be surprised every day why it is that when Africa has found its freedom, the next thing it looks for is gluttony. If we're going to do that, it is important for us to create space where we will listen to the stories of the people, share the gospel of Jesus Christ that purifies and that empowers the people. I am wanting to challenge here this morning the tendency that has developed in all our way of doing ministry, where the ministry is happening either in the chapel or in the minister's study. And I am saying that is not the church that will give hope to this continent. The church that will give hope to this continent is a church that will discover anew the value of pastoral care. But a pastoral care that is not guided merely by emergencies such as deaths, or by the minister wanting to determine why a family is no longer coming to church. It will not be driven by a pastoral care where the minister just wants to know why certain members have not paid their dues. But it will be driven by a desire to help every family find a new sense of wholeness for itself, as a collective, for its individual members. There's a story that stays with me that I always find very moving about how what the church used to do. This minister used to visit the homes, and he gets to a home and actually sees the boys playing and asks the father, "Why are these boys here?" "No, it's because they are looking after my cows." "Do you realize that their future is limited if you don't give them education?" "Ah, Mfundisi, what should I do?" He says, "Bring them to school, but you come to night school as well, so that you may be able to continue to build your children." They pass primary school with first class. He goes back to the minister, "What should I do now?" The minister says, "Let's find a school that will continue to grow them in this way. Take them to that school." They pass matric, first class. "Phyllis, what should I do with these boys now?" "Let's take them to medical school." Three boys all came out as medical doctors, none of which went to private practice because it violated the values they had been brought up in. They went into public medicine because for them, it was never for themselves. And if you ask, they say, the minister at our church told us that to live, you don't live for yourself, you live for us. It is that depth that we've got to find. Not only for South Africa, but for the whole continent. My submission to end is that Africa and its individual nations will not overcome its problems without finding its own sense of being, a worthy purpose for its own life, and a burning desire to find ways to be truthful to its own vision. It has to find, the continent of Africa has to find capacity to love its people and accept its responsibility for them. The church is not always helpful when it celebrates charity and denominational distinctiveness at the expense of the empowerment of Africa and its people to love themselves, to accept their responsibility for their own fate, enabling them to accept accountability. I conclude that such efforts by the church in Africa would show a Christian faith that is a source of great hope, a Christian faith that is healing, restoring, purifying, strengthening, and marking the journey of the continent with kingdom values and signposts embedded in African institutional life. To make Christianity African for Africa cannot be the end of Christianity, but rather the rebirth of this great faith as it infuses new life to our beloved continent. I thank you.